All right.
Do you want me I'm to starting, go first?
I'm collecting myself. I'm collecting myself. Hi, I'm Richard Clark.
And I'm Bethany Perkins.
We can't stop talking about the Enneagram.
So we decided to start a podcast where we get it all out of our system.
We're not experts.
We're just obsessed.
It's No Chill Enneagram.
A safe space for Enneagram fanatics.
And a really dumb idea for a podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of our podcast, Bethany Perkins.
Yes. Hi.
How's it going?
It's going great. I'm a little sick, so you may notice as I'm talking that I sound
Bear with
way.
Us. If you hear Bethany blow her nose, try to act like, just be cool about it.
Be cool, you guys, okay?
Don't make a big deal out. Don't be like, ugh. And don't rate us with one star and go, ugh, either.
Yeah.
We have a really awesome guest, one of my favorite writers on the internet. Her name is Laura Turner. Laura.
You guys should really at least get my name right beforehand.
I don't know why I just like dropped the R on the end of your name, but I basically
thing.
Got it right.
Mm-hmm, basically.
Yeah, exactly. Laura Turner. That's how my mom would pronounce your name.
I like it.
Laura, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, you write a lot of stuff. How would you describe what you write?
Just stuff. I like that way. You write a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. I do. I usually tell people that I write a lot about religion and politics. But I often say that just because I think it's, you know, a way of getting people to stop asking more questions.
Right?
Because it's like
freaking people out immediately.
Oh, the things you're not supposed to. I do that. I write a lot of personal essays, and I write a lot about anxiety as well. So however those things all fit together, those are the main things that I write about.
Right. And you have in particular been going sort of all in on the anxiety stuff lately, it feels like. Which, how does that feel to like make anxiety your beat? Like, what made you want to do that?
My brand. I mean, I think a big part of what made me want to do it is it's kind of like, you know, people say in book writing, write the book you want to read. And for me, I have not yet written a book, although I'm working on one about anxiety right now. But it was born out of my own experience with anxiety that I started to write about it more, just because I wanted to read about it. And there wasn't as much narrative writing about anxiety a few years ago as maybe there is now. I think for a lot of reasons, we're in an age of heightened anxiety, even, you know, four or five years out from when I started writing, that has increased nationally. So it's a topic that people are interested in. It's a topic that I'm interested in, and it has lots and lots of different facets, and I like mining those.
That makes a lot of sense. Lately, I've been feeling like, no wonder I'm anxious. And then the reasons I'm anxious are like normal people things. Like, they're not unique, right? And it feels like we're in a time where everyone's just living a life that will inherently make them anxious.
Yeah.
Between social media and the way we deal with work and the way we deal with life, and we have family across the country and all of this stuff. It's just like, it feels like inherently unhealthy all the time.
Yeah, and there's a lot of fragmentation in modern life. I'm obviously not the first person to observe that, but I think when we start to feel disconnected or like we're at pieces of ourselves, we lack the integrity that can make us unanxious. And I think that's actually where, you know, to segue, the Enneagram has been and continues to be really helpful to me. To think about myself as a whole person and to think about anxiety as both a hardship and in some ways a gift as well.
What number are you?
I'm a 3. So I hope that you guys really become impressed with what I have to say to you.
We're already impressed.
That you think real highly of me. I'm a 3. I think with a 2 wing, although I certainly sometimes can think of myself as, you know, wanting to be special and all that goes along with a 4. But I think primarily I would identify as a 3 with a 2 wing.
Based on the list of interests you gave us when we asked you, like, what were you into? I think I would have bet $100 that you were a four
because win. Because I said I was interested in death.
That too.
Yeah. Death and like envy. Death and envy. Come on.
Yeah.
Maybe I need to explore this more.
I want you to have a two wing though, because because I'm a two.
Yeah, I mean, I understand, Bethany.
Yeah.
Well, let's fight over it.
Okay.
Let's go to our next segment, which is called "How Bad Has It Gotten?" How bad has your obsession with the Enneagram gotten in your life?
So I was thinking about this when I was at home looking on my bookshelf to see how many Enneagram books I have. And I think it all started with the Richard Rohr book, which I think is a, you know, a gateway drug for a lot of us. And then to be fair, for a time I did work at Harper One, which published a lot of Enneagram books. So these I got for free, but I think I had 11 different Enneagram books on my shelf, which I feel like is, that's, you can take that for what it is.
How many have you read?
That's amazing. I have not read all of them. Yeah. Probably have read like 8 of them. I think there were 2 or 3 I hadn't.
You got me beat.
So many. Yeah.
Oh man, I should host a podcast. Move out of the way, you guys. You let the three take over.
I heard anyone can host a podcast about the Enneagram at this point.
Yeah.
Anyone.
So because you're a three and you have an interest in anxiety, there's one particular thing I wanted to talk about. And I'm not just mashing together words. This is actually a subject I've been particularly interested in. But this idea of performance anxiety. This is something that I realized I feel like I struggle with. So the times that I've had like something close to anxiety attacks, it's been like either right after or right before I was about to like perform in some way. So I like improv related or like public speaking, or even like I realized at one point, every time I write something, I'm having like a slow-mo anxiety attack, basically. Do you experience any of this, especially as an Enneagram 3? Is this something that affects you, and like, does it affect you at all?
So something that's really funny is that like what you're describing is obviously very normal. And I think you've talked a little bit about doing improv and how that can be both scary and helpful. I've never done it before, but I think that's such a good way of kind of training yourself through the fear. But even though I'll get anxious or nervous before I'm gonna maybe speak in front of people or before I share something that I write, I think probably because I'm a three, that actually is like way more energizing and exciting for me.
Oh, interesting.
So I get that kind of nervous energy where I feel a little jittery or over caffeinated, but I actually feel that in the excitement channel of that nervous energy rather than the anxiety channel of that nervous energy. And I think that's a little bit harder for some other people who are anxious to relate to, because the idea of maybe speaking in public is really terrifying, and I actually really like it. But that's, I think, the three, like performance, you know, doing something that maybe is impressive or achieving something, like that feeds into a part of me that's both really good because I like communicating and really, really desires other people's approval.
Let's type people and things.
Yay.
So we decided, it sounds like we all love Harry Potter.
Yes.
What a relief.
Yeah. You have no idea how relieved I am.
Hard to find a group of people.
Yeah.
It is.
We're all like, pro Harry Potter.
First of all, can we just establish where people were when they started reading Harry Potter, like in their lives? Because I think this is an interesting question. And it's one that's going to date me and make Bethany sound like a like she was just born or something.
So, so I started reading it in the womb.
Wow.
No. I was definitely a child. I don't know exactly how old I was, but my mom used to read it to us. But I hated reading as a kid, so I didn't actually like read them on my own until I was like a teenager, and then that started my obsession. So
I was in college.
Oh my!
Yeah, I was definitely in college when I started reading Harry Potter, and it was well into the series, though, I'll say that.
Okay, so it wasn't like they came out when you were
I started reading around the time the fifth maybe was coming out. So I remember the last few I would like camp out at the bookstore or whatever.
Nice.
What about you, Laura?
Oh, nice. I was right in between you guys. I think I was in high school, although again, I think they had come out maybe when I was in middle school, or the first, the very first one came out when I was in middle school, but I read them in high school, and I remember the very, like, maybe the fifth one also. I think the fifth one, The Order of the Phoenix, came out when I was a graduating senior in high school, and I think that was the only one that I did the, like, go to the bookstore kind of thing, which was great. And then my husband and I, when the very last of the second, the divided sequel movies were coming out, we rewatched all the movies together, and he had not read the book, so that was very fun.
Awesome. I remember, so I have a very clear memory of being in line for the last book, and just being deathly afraid that someone would drive by and yell spoilers out the window.
Oh my god!
For some reason, that was a thing that felt possible. I feel like maybe I'd seen a video of it happening or something, and was
of all
scared.
The fears to have, though.
I know.
We should look into that in therapy, I think.
All right. So let's type the characters. Bethany, I want you to lead on this because you probably know all the characters better than we do. So let's just throw a name out there, and then we can discuss who's what.
Okay. Well, let's start with Hermione because I think that's really obvious that she's a one, I think.
Interesting. Laura, I would have guessed that Hermione was I would have said Hermione was a two, but I think that because she was so often the one who was there to help everybody else when they were in a pinch.
We were just reading the toast before you came on because we went through like were like just randomly reading your selective works, and then we were at the toast, we were like, I wonder if they wrote about Harry Potter, and we did a search, and then we found an article that was something like, what would happen if Hermione didn't do everyone's homework for them?
Yes, I remember that one, actually.
It's so, so that's true. A really everyone good would point. Have failed. There's definitely some two stuff going on there.
Maybe she's a two wing. Yeah. Maybe she's a one with a two
I
wing.
I think she's a one wing two,
yeah,
for sure.
I like that.
I just think, like, because ones are so motivated by, like, being good and being right.
Yep.
And that seems like it's her motivation. And, like, you know, she is a perfectionist and the perfect grades and all the answers and all that stuff.
What was that weird thing she started where she helps the elves?
Oh, for the house elves. Yeah. I forgot.
Was it called Spew?
It was called Spew.
It was.
It was.
Yeah.
That's so weird.
See, but that's like a justice thing, you know?
Totally.
Like, it's justice and compassion, you know?
Though when I was young, I started a Save the Whales thing, which that was weird.
You started Save the Whales, Richard?
Save the Whales. Anyone heard of it?
No. It really blossomed.
I would, like, go around collecting money for Save the Whales. And this is terrible. I'm pretty sure I didn't give that money to any whales.
Oh, no.
I don't know what happened.
You didn't even give it to the whales.
I was a little kid. I didn't know what I was doing.
Those but we poor were not, whales.
Yeah, someone needed to report me, to be honest. Because
I needed to at least, like, walk out to the ocean and
throw the money in. Like Good Job idea. With the letter in Arrested Development.
Right. Yes.
All the dollar bills are just flying back in my face.
Yeah.
You know, I could see a five for her, but I think that's, like, oversimplifying a little bit.
It's
like, saying, you're creative, you're a four.
Right. It's like, you like to study, you're a five.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I definitely thought about it, but
no, I think the one wing two is right.
Cool.
Okay, Ron.
Ron has got to be. Oh wait, can I go or should I wait for you guys to go?
Yeah, no,
you
can go.
Okay. Yeah, go for
I
it.
I feel like Ron is 100% a six.
Yes.
Agreed.
All right. Yep. Moving on.
Oh, that was easy.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah.
He's just so, like, I mean, like the definition of loyal. Kind of nervous to, like,
fearful.
Try new things. He wants to go in with a plan. I can't see anything else but a six.
Can I ask a question here? Is it possible that J.K. Rowling, like, knows about the Enneagram or knew about it and used it in her writing?
I know that she knows about it, I'm pretty sure. Okay. I don't know if she knew about it back then, but...
Because if I were a writer, it would be hard for me not to just automatically assign numbers to every character.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, like, a really good way of writing good characters, I feel like.
I remember when I was doing my MFA in creative nonfiction writing, one of my mentors actually said it's a great way to develop people or characters. If you know their Enneagram number, read a little bit about them and use that language to talk about them. So kind of felt like cheating, but can actually be...
Yes.
Really useful when you're writing about someone else.
Yeah. Okay, but we need to talk about Harry. Because, hear me out, I think that Harry is a 4.
What?
Whoa.
Yep. I think he's a self-preservation 4.
Wow.
I
have thought long and hard about this.
I believe
you. And
I've
tweeted many things about it because I was just stumped for a long time. Like, I thought I'd considered 9, but I really don't think he's a 9. I thought 1, but he's like, you know, he breaks the rules all the time. And then I read about self-preservation 4s, and it's called, it's like the long-suffering 4.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're stoic in the face of their inner pain. They don't share it with other people. They want to hide it. That's like their form of suffering is like... They suffer inwardly, but they don't really want other people to see it, and they don't want attention for it. And he totally has, like, that inner wound of, like, or the childhood wound of abandonment and feeling different from everyone else.
Yeah,
like,
yes.
He was magical, but he didn't know it his whole life until he was 12 years old. And
yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, he's like, I knew it when the owl's like, no, you go to a magic school.
Yeah.
Like, this explains so much.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. I love that.
So, that's what I think. But because 4s go to 1 insecurity, I think that's why I saw so much 1 in him.
Laura, do you buy that?
I don't know. I don't know much about the self-preservation 4, so I'm going to need to do a little more research. I have always, ever since I've thought about Harry Potter and the Enneagram, which has been a very long time, I have always thought of him as an 8 with a 9 wing.
Oh.
Which I have actually talked about with some other people before, and they did not see that either. So I could be totally wrong, but I think there's a way that he, I mean, both like literally and metaphorically, is always aware of where power is in any given situation. And he will not always be the first one to step into the role where there's a power vacuum, which isn't very 8-like of him. But with a 9 wing, I think... taking that kind of peacemaker approach, being someone who thinks about other people and what they want and need while also being kind of a ringleader in the way that he is. And, you know, he gets more and more opinionated as time goes on and as he kind of grows up. So I don't know. Now I just want to go back and reread all the Harry Potter books in light of this. So let me do that.
I know. I have not read them since I've known about the Enneagram, so I'm definitely going to do that. And
yeah, that's a little mind-blowing if he's a 4.
I mean, I still really think, like, I read that self-preservation 4 and, like, texted a bunch of people and, like, tweeted it, and I was like, I figured it out. It's Harry.
I'm going to go read about that now.
Yeah.
I think for our next segment, I want to do... This is the last segment, I think. I want to do... I really want to do this segment so bad. This segment is called We're All Going to Die in One of 9 Ways.
Yes.
How will each number die? The rule here is healthy numbers, not unhealthy numbers. That's too easy because they all either die of suicide or like overdose or something. For a healthy number, how will they die? And we'll just do round robin on this one, starting with 1, which will... I'll start, I guess. I think a 1 dies by, like, dies on a hill. Get it?
Because literally,
like,
yeah.
Like, they die on that hill every time.
I think
they die in a battle that's probably not too necessary.
I was thinking, like, they die on the front lines of a protest, like... fighting for justice.
Whoa, that's good too.
Yeah.
That's a good one. That's even better. All right.
Yeah.
Bethany, what about 2s?
I mean, okay, when
I'm sure you thought a lot about this.
Well, when you when you posed this question to me, I just thought about that. There's this tiny, short little story in Acts chapter 9, I think, about a woman named Tabitha. And it was like, she was doing all these compassionate good deeds, and then she just got sick and died. And, like, the sickness is not necessarily related to doing good deeds, but then she was raised from the dead, so that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I was going to say, she came back from the dead, so that's, like, kind of great.
She did.
That's awesome.
So I would like to claim that for twos.
Sweet. Laura, what about threes?
This is, again, morbid, but we're talking about death, my favorite topic. Threes are totally the people who die trying to take selfies at, like, the edge of the Grand Canyon.
Oh, my gosh.
That is
true.
You know, we're getting the right lighting. The background is beautiful. Yeah. We look great. And then we just take one step back too far. We are not paying attention to things that are going on around us. Yeah. And it's a little narcissist, like, you know. We fall into the pond.
At a national park. With, like, a moose, you're, like, trying to take a selfie, and then it just, like...
Yeah, and then the moose gores you with its antlers.
Yep.
Yeah.
Fours. Oh, my, guys, I'll be honest. I'm stuck right now. I am trying to think of how a four dies. Maybe just, like, hit by a car or something.
I feel like... Okay, wait, can I say something? Oh, that's what it is. So, my sibling is a four. And he, when we were little kids, he would be so engrossed in reading books, like his fantasy world was so real to him, what he was imagining in reading a book, that he would just step out into traffic. That's times out of 10. There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. That when I said got hit by a car, I said that as a random way of dying. But then immediately I was like, oh, yes, this is how it happens. You're so obsessed with yourself and what you're doing.
Yeah.
You walk into the street.
You just walk into poles and then into traffic and then you die.
There you go.
That's how it happens. Bethany, what about a five?
Fives, I don't know. Maybe they just, like, they get so engrossed in, like, reading the encyclopedias that they forget to eat and sleep. And then they just, like, neglect
their physical needs.
Yep. That sounds right.
I believe
it. Horrible.
Laura, what about a six?
The very end of my favorite movie of all time, which is 21 Jump Street, starring Channing Tatum and Jonah Hill. Jonah Hill is trying to fire his gun, and he's like, you know, can't do it, can't make it happen. He's just too nervous. And Channing Tatum notices that the bad guy is going to shoot Jonah Hill and jumps in front of him. He takes a bullet for his friend.
And that's
a complete six death. Luckily, in the movie, Channing Tatum only gets hit in the shoulder, but that's like... You know, that's how a six would die, taking a bullet for a friend.
I love it.
That's
great.
So good.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
I think a seven dies in pretty obvious ways. They just all happen to be really random. But, you know, jumping off stuff or, like, eating stuff maybe they shouldn't. Or, like, just doing stuff, like, that's dangerous because that's what they do. They just, like, do stuff.
Just dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What about eights?
I feel like an eight would just, like, get into a fight with somebody.
Yeah.
No, but they wouldn't get killed in a fight, would they?
Probably.
With another eight. Fight with another
eight.
It's
like two badgers.
Two eights on different sides of an issue. Yep.
Yeah. No, but, like, a physical fight. Like, they're going at it.
If you had two eights, like, who would come out on top?
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Right. Well, maybe they both die in the fight. I don't know.
They die simultaneously.
Yeah.
Whose turn is next?
It's me. And nines would die trying to decide where to go out to dinner. You just, like, have a group of nines together. And no one would make a decision. They would all defer to the other person until they died.
Oh, my gosh. All the nines are going to be so offended.
Sorry, I'm married to a nine, so I can speak with authority.
Oh, okay. It's okay then.
We offended, I think, every number here, except for the sixes and the twos.
The sixes and the twos, because we get raised from the dead.
You guys have it good.
That's not dying. That's the opposite. Well, Laura, thanks so much for coming on the show. This was really fun. Maybe before you go, since we know you have to go, you could just leave with something you're having a hard time with in life and we could give you life advice, you could just do that thing where you're like, I'll take it off the air.
Yes, I've always wanted to say that and I've never been able to say that before.
Well, here's your chance.
Okay. So, I recently had a baby. He's 3 months old. He's great. And for the next, for the next month, I am still staying at home and not really working. I have one article I'm supposed to be writing, but I have to spend this month like being a parent and not being a three basically, because I, the thing that I'm achieving every day is keeping my son alive and spending time with him and like loving him as well as I can. But people aren't seeing that. It's not impressive. It's not getting accolades. Yeah. And I feel a good amount of anxiety about that. So being aware of that and, you know, thinking about that a lot is definitely something I've been doing. So I'd love to hear what you think, but I'm going to take my advice off the air, you guys.
I really like this question because I've definitely seen my wife, Jennifer, go through this twice now. And one of the things that I would think would be really hard as a three is exactly what Laura was saying, which is like not being able to sort of show people what you're accomplishing. Bethany, I'm struggling as I'm talking about this. I'm like trying to think through whether or not it is healthy to want that affirmation and people to see your accomplishments. It has to be somewhat healthy because God made threes, right? Like,
isn't that
like the key of a three? Like, that's what a three is?
Yeah, wanting to be affirmed and seen as successful. I think it can go, I mean, like anything, it can be healthy and it can be not healthy. If you need to be affirmed by others for what you're doing in order for that to have value, like that's probably not healthy.
Right.
If you need that, but if you're just like, you know, I know myself and I need some affirmation that what I'm spending all of my time doing is valuable, then yeah, I think that's pretty normal.
Here's something. I mean, I guess the core of the three isn't necessarily being seen as valuable, but to feel valuable, right? So obviously the answer there is there are people closer to you, certainly, you know, there are people closest to you who can make you feel valuable. One of the things that's incredibly hard about being a parent is that there is no performance review or report card. Right? So you don't ever get anything back that just concretely says you're killing it right now. And I feel like that can be a really disturbing reality sometimes. It can be like because your only feedback is literally like a person losing their mind and crying in your face. Other than, especially for like infants.
Yeah.
I think that can be really tough. So I think the key is to like, maybe, okay, here's my concrete advice. Sit down and write down ways that your husband, those closest to you, and your kids, them, and your child, even the, your infant child, can tell you that you're doing a good job. So how does an infant child tell a mom that they're doing a good job? I think
I don't know that there's an answer to that.
I think there is. I think that it's a lot less like obvious. It's more subtle. But like things like not crying might be one. People say this jokingly, but it's true. If you keep your child alive, that is a feat.
Yes.
Like
it
is. That is a real feat. Yeah. And so I think that needs to be even. I think even the act of writing it down as one of many ways you basically receive an A++ on your report card, you know what I mean? Will make you feel like I've accomplished something.
Yeah.
I'd also say Instagram is a good way to get like that quick hit of affirmation and that you need when you are struggling and just need someone to affirm you. Just like post something on Instagram or Twitter or whatever and just say, look how cute my baby is, and everyone will say,
respond,
yes, that's true.
The heart eyes and everything.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it works. It helps me. That's for sure.
what
do you think, Bethany?
I was thinking when she was expressing that, like, I am now watching some of my friends go through this first baby thing. And it is like, watching someone who's like really close to you like go through that, it's so much harder than I ever could have imagined.
Yeah.
And I just want to affirm, like, what you're doing is amazing. Like, if it's your first or your fifth or whatever, like, taking care of yourself and a newborn baby is incredibly amazing and impressive. And I think that the feeling that, like, oh, this is not impressing anyone, I'm not accomplishing anything, is just, like, not true. I mean, I just think it is amazing.
I totally agree.
Yeah.
So A++ off the bat.
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to, for our last thing on the show, we are going to type reviews. I know that you, some of you were screaming at the podcast.
Have not stopped screaming since it started.
I reviewed you 4 days ago, and no one's typed to my review yet. Well, yeah. Calm down, sir. We're on top of it.
Yeah.
We have a lot of ground to catch up on, but we're going to get there. We promise one way or another this will happen.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to keep typing reviews. In the meantime, if you want to, if you want us to type you, just leave a review. It's all you have to do.
Yep.
That's our new jingle. If you want us to type you, just leave a review. That's all you have to do.
Wow.
Thanks, Bethany. All right.
That was great.
Thank you.
Five stars.
So, speaking of five stars, here's a five-star review from Steph3313. It says, perfect in every way. There's a lot of great Enneagram content out there. This podcast is about having fun chatting about something that interests a lot of us. It's okay that it's not all correct, in quotes. I like the quotes.
Yeah.
It's true that we are not, quote, correct. that's what makes it good. Well, I would debate that part, but
yeah.
And then it says, feeling inspired, 3-wing 4. I don't know. Probably 3-wing 4.
I assume. I think so. Oh, this is a good one.
Oh, I love this one.
The next one.
You go ahead and read this one. We'll alternate reading them.
Okay. Yay. 5 stars. What a great podcast, but I'm biased. From Dead Yet Living.
That's me, guys.
That's you.
I'm a 4. All right. Next one. Superb. 5 stars. Just to be clear, I love the word superb. There are 2 words I love when it comes to reviewing something. Superb is one of them. And lovely is the other. Lovely is a really good word to use.
I like that. Yeah.
Someone get out there and review us and say lovely. all right. I'm not going to read this whole thing. It's long. A genuinely amazing podcast. I'm also expecting a type me segment on the podcast because of this, by the way. Aww. Aww. I love this podcast and all the people that are on it because of their honesty, laid-back nature, and empathy. I love that being religious, I am not, in parentheses, is not an obstacle to enjoying this podcast like some other forms of Enneagram media.
Weed.
Looking at you, Enneacast.
Wow. We
Just
love
kidding.
That that's not an obstacle to enjoying the podcast either.
Yeah, we welcome non-religious people and religious people alike.
Mm-hmm.
This podcast has helped me learn more about the Enneagram, my loved ones, and myself. I'd like to thank everyone that works on the show and has guested because each and every one of you is a true gift. I wish you all the best in their future podcast endeavors. That is so relationally focused, it feels like a 2 to me. So that's from Hippo421.
In Great Britain.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Ooh. I think all Great Britain people are 2s anyway, so let's just go with that.
Yeah, I agree with you. Yep, because I feel very loved by that, so.
All right, I do not feel as loved by this next one, but you take it.
Okay, a fun listen, 4 stars.
What the heck?
this was fun. I appreciate your authenticity and self-awareness while not taking yourselves too seriously. So many people say that, I'm glad. Like
that we don't take ourselves too seriously?
Yeah, and that people get that.
Yeah, that's true. I guess we don't say that out loud on the podcast very much.
Well,
huh?
No, because who would just sit here and say,
maybe we should
I don't
add it
take
to our,
myself seriously.
Should we add it to our intro? We're obsessed
no.
about the Enneagram, but we don't take ourselves too seriously.
No. Anyway, okay. And can relate to a lot of what you're chatting about. Any guesses on my number?
Yes.
In
can
New
I
Zealand.
Just say,
yeah.
New Zealand. Wow. Mm-hmm. Can I say they reference two things they appreciate? Authenticity and self-awareness. That's a four.
Yep, absolutely.
Tell us if you're right, because I feel pretty good about that one.
I do too. Pretty confident.
All right, next one. My kind of podcast. 5 stars. As someone who is Enneagram curious, I love this podcast. Am I a 9? A 4? I don't know. I don't care. You're 9.
Wow. Yeah.
Bethany and Richard are gems. This show is quirky, and I will listen to every episode. Definitely a 9.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Next.
Okay.
Oh, that was P. Charlene G.,
mm-hmm.
by the way. And the one before that was Louise.
Yeah, we're really bad at reading the names right now. Okay. Fun, lighthearted, and genuine, looking for a way to feed your Enneagram fascination, but have already made your way through all the Enneagram Institute's pages, typed all your friends, and been told to shut up at parties? Or are you stressed about discerning your type and need some unique low pressure ways, hold on, I got it. Oh, this is long.
Yes, I was gonna say.
Low pressure ways of thinking of the numbers, or are you tired of how everyone treats the Enneagram as the Holy Grail / something completely sacred, but are still intrigued and like to think about it? If you can answer yes
that
to
was,
any of these
that
questions.
That felt like all one sentence. It was so long.
It really does feel like that, but there are a couple sentences in there.
Yeah.
As an Enneagram fan who's been to Suzanne Stabile's workshop, listens to Sleeping at Last songs and podcasts, same, and really enjoys using it to think about people and do some introspection. I highly recommend this as a fun, low-key podcast, make you laugh and reflect. They're upfront about what it is and what it isn't. Avoid it if you think you'll be offended by the ranking of the numbers, but if this is the case, the experience will probably be good for you.
Can I just say, I don't think they framed that correctly.
What?
Because if you just say to someone, if you're offended by people ranking Enneagram numbers, don't check it out. I feel like a number of people are going to be like, oh, I'm not checking that out. You have to say somewhere it's a joke in that sentence. Jokingly ranking the numbers.
I mean, we've talked about this so many times. We think that ranking the numbers is a self-evident joke, but apparently it isn't. So,
right.
Anyway, they say at the end, they don't know their number. They ruled out 8 and 7. So,
after all this thinking, wow.
They've thought so much. Maybe they're a 5.
Five maybe or a 9. That's the rule.
No,
5 or
I don't,
a 9.
I don't think 9, but I really think maybe 5, because they have, like, it sounds like they've read a lot. They've been to workshops. They listen to all the podcasts. I don't know. But, like, I do that too, so I don't know.
I mean, everyone on our, everyone who listens to us that probably does that.
Yeah.
Let's just say 5 and move on.
Okay, moving on.
Enneagram, this is the last one. Enneagram-tastic. A semi-serious explorations of all things Enneagram. The hosts are super funny. Their laughter is contagious. Ooh, sorry, guys. Didn't mean to give you contagious stuff. This is the podcast I didn't know I needed. I'm secretly hoping the Ennea slang takes off.
Mm.
But if it doesn't, that's okay.
That's okay.
The reason that's the last one, which, by the way, that's probably a, I don't know, 4, because they like funny things.
What?
And they want Ennea slang take off. 6.
6.
I'm going with 6.
I was going to say 2 because they said they didn't know they needed this, so they don't, if they don't know their needs.
That sounds like a 6 to me too, though.
Okay.
Like a 6 is like, here's the thing. They contradict themselves twice. They didn't know they needed it. It's like, I need this, I didn't know that. They hope the Enneagram slang takes off, but if it doesn't, that's okay. That's a 6 that doesn't trust themselves.
Okay, red shoes, 7.
Red
in
shoes
Australia.
7. In Australia,
you're a
6. Is a 6.
All right. Love seeing where these people are from.
It's really fun. I agree.
It is really fun.
All right. Well, that brings us to our next segment, which I actually want to do right now, called Can We Make Enneagram Slang Happen?
Let's hear it.
Bethany, get ready. We got a suggestion from our listeners, and we will always take suggestions for Enneagram slang.
Yes.
This is from Cuppet with an exclamation mark on Twitter. Her Twitter name is Super Cuppet. That's two P's and two T's in the word Cuppet.
Okay.
You know, just how you spell Cuppet. They have an Enneagram slang that I freaking love.
Okay.
Enne Epiphany.
Oh, yeah, I remember seeing that.
She said, example, S was talking about nines going to a six and stress and being paranoid, but how she might not always go to a six. I've been thinking, this is a long example.
Yeah,
it's like use it in a sentence and then it's a paragraph. I've been thinking I'm a nine and I've been stressed. And when she said it, I whispered paranoia in awe because that's exactly me right now. Enne Epiphany. I feel like that was not a great use it in a sentence example.
Okay, wait. I have an example.
Okay.
Of a real Enne Epiphany I had. So for a while, I was I spent a couple months like trying to make sure that I was not a six and mm-hmm. that I was a two, mm-hmm. because I have a lot of six. And I was talking to a friend about like the fear versus the shame triad, and I was like, I really don't know what I experience more, fear or shame.
Mm.
And my friend kind of explained to me like what the shame voice sounds like versus what the fear voice sounds like. And like shame is like attacking like your worth and your value. Like I'm horrible, I'm terrible.
Yeah.
No one loves me, blah, blah, blah.
Sounds familiar.
And then, right? Yeah. And then fear is like, oh, bad things are going to happen to me. And I guess I just did not know much about shame. And so, but when she verbalized those things, I had an Enne Epiphany.
Yeah.
And totally, yeah, realized.
I love this word because it's so appropriate for that experience we have so mm-hmm. often. And it's like, I don't know if there's a better word for it, to be honest. So
I think
we can make Enne Epiphany happen. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, we had one other segment we wanted to do with Laura Turner, but we didn't have time. It's called, yeah. What number would you envy? Mm-hmm. Of all the numbers, like, what's the number you wish you were? And I think I already talked about mine. It's probably a three.
You want to be a three?
I think... Yes, I kind of want to be a three, yeah.
You were saying, though, that you're bad at your threeness.
Yeah, I'm not good at it. I'm not good at it. So here's the deal. If you're a four-wing three, all you want to do is be a three-wing four real bad, because four-wing threes are constantly trying to, like, make their dumb passion project work out, and they don't know how. They don't know how to make things that are them work. So I feel like if I was a three, I could, like, really pull it off well and then feel like it is a part of me and everyone likes me.
Okay.
That's healthy, right?
I mean, we're literally doing a thing right now that you are making it work.
That's true.
So,
yeah, this has been one of my happiest projects in a while.
Yeah.
No offense, other projects in my life.
Me too. I don't have other projects in my life, but...
Just people.
Oh, that is true.
Enne roasted. We can make that happen, I think.
Oh, yeah.
That's we got to work on that. There's a better word for that, probably.
Okay.
Enne slammed. Boom! Yes! That was an Enne slam.
Sure. All right.
When you weaponize the Enneagram in good faith.
In good faith.
Yeah, like it's like between friends, right? It's in,
yeah.
Just a little Enne slam there.
A little Enne burn.
No, how can you not use Enne slam, Bethany? I'm really excited about this. It rhymes with Enneagram.
Okay. I'm sorry that I don't share your immediate enthusiasm.
All right.
It's good. Okay, can we talk about me now?
No. Yes.
I want so badly to be an eight. I would really love to be an eight.
Oh, that would be nice, wouldn't it?
Because
I'm thinking about
eight,
it right now.
Like, I mean, I wish I could have a number for like how much time I spend in my life worrying about what other people think about me and if they like me and if I'm pleasing them. And eights just like don't care what other people think about them.
I'm closing my eyes. I have my hand in the air. Right.
Yeah, I just, I would love to be an eight. So,
yeah.
But so, the sad part is like, so I go to eight and stress. That's a very real thing that I frequently experience.
Uh-huh.
But unlike an eight, I feel horribly guilty about
it. Like afterward, you have an eight hangover?
Like, yes. Like I just feel ashamed of like how rude I was and like, yeah. Cause in the moment I just like stop caring about other people's feelings. But then soon after I do care very much.
Yeah. I have that with one when I go to, one is my healthy.
That's your security number.
Never mind. Okay. Forget it. But when I do go to one, sometimes I will regret that because I'll just like blurt out what's right in my opinion. And then I'll be like, oh, was that okay? I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I totally relate to that. But the thing that people think about eight, sometimes they like don't know what to do, but they just do stuff. And the thing about eights is that they actually know what to do. Like, they don't have a healthy eight, especially. Like, they just know what to do inherently. They don't have to feel or think about anything.
Oh, yeah.
They just have an instinctual sense of what to do, and then they do that thing.
Yeah.
And it makes me so angry because I have to literally agonize over something for 2 weeks until I know what I should do, and then I have to coax myself into doing that thing.
Eights were jealous of you.
Eights were jealous of you, and rate and review our show, and that's the end of the podcast now.
That's it.
All right. I think that was a good podcast.
I think it was good.
Cool.
Yeah.
This has been No Chill Enneagram. It is hosted and produced by Richard Clark and Bethany Perkins. Edited by Richard Clark. Theme music is Max Flashback by Lee Rosevier. We want to hear from you. If you're an Enneagram number 9, 4, 2, or 7, feel free to leave a review on iTunes. If you are a 6, please only do this if you trust us. If you are an 8 or a 1, please do not leave us a review on iTunes. But you can feel free to reach out to us on Twitter, where we'd love to be challenged by you or hear from your overflowing inner critic. Our Twitter handle is @NoChillEnneapod. That's @NoChillEnneapod. Enneagram number 5. Please include us in your next exhaustive list of hilarious podcasts. And 3s. You can just give us credit after we inspire you to do whatever amazing thing you're going to do next. If you are a number 1 through 9 and you haven't already, subscribe to this podcast wherever podcasts are subscribable.